Government Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this March the 11th on the West Coast, now March the 12th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, as well as everywhere across the Atlantic Ocean into Europe, Asia, and Africa. I understand we even have some listeners in Australia, so I want to welcome everyone that tuned in from around the world, and let's not forget Central and South America. Also like to welcome all the intelligence agencies that are tuning in, and we're going to share some information that you may or may not know about, and tonight's guest is going to help us out with that. He is a webmaster of a very popular website. I say this every time he comes on the show. His site is actually more popular with each appearance. So if you haven't been to educate-yourself.org, you owe yourself a visit there. He's got a lot of fantastic research on politics, on the New World Order, on the Old World Order, on scams, on illusions, metaphysics, science, you name it, he's got it. He's also a very good researcher and an excellent journalist. He's my good friend, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. A delight to be on again.
Well, we've been talking about a lot of different things and over the past few weeks. We're discussed with mainstream media, are discussed with the propaganda and the mind control that's going on. And while this is making the news in the alternative sense, we're not hearing a whole lot about what's going on with a lot of the viral epidemics that are going around right now. And these aren't pandemics, but there are people getting sick. And I attribute a lot of it to chemtrails. Now, interestingly, I saw a video a couple of days ago that just came out on YouTube. Somebody made a compendium of mainstream television broadcasts, little 30-second to 1-minute sound bites where ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, Headline News, Fox News, they're all doing these little vignettes on chemtrails and Morgellons. It's interesting that they come out talking about this all at the same time. And then they say the CDC is going to look into Morgellons. Now they interviewed some people, they showed the sores with the fibers, and when you see Diane Sawyer or Katie Couric or these mainstream, TV anchors talking about this, and they've never mentioned a word about it, you know they're all following a script. I got wind that there's a movie coming out which is going to allude to this as if somebody is breaking the story. You know, so it's going to result in the vaccine solution, of course. They're going to say, well, you know, to fight chemtrails, even though the government is up there spraying these and black ops groups, and they're doing it probably condoned by the UN. They ought to spray the UN and just keep spraying it and spraying it for a couple of days. And let's see how they manage things. But nonetheless, it's quite obvious that the mainstream wouldn't talk about this unless they had another PSYOPs program going on. So we're just going to play a couple of moves ahead. And imagine this is just a chess game. I'm sure you're probably surprised to hear that if you didn't hear about that there is a YouTube video where a guy actually put a whole collage of these different broadcasts together, and And then you get to listen to some of the victims and how they're suffering from this horrible disease.
Mm.
A flesh-eating bacteria, basically, is what it is. Mm. And you've done quite a bit of work on your website. Cliff Carnicom has also done quite a bit of research at his own expense, and he's determined some of the same things that have come out. Recently, in fact, yesterday we had a call in. Dr. Christopher Holmes called in to the show, and he's been following the chemtrail issue for a number of years. And I was on his show on BBS Radio last weekend. In fact, I'm going to be on his show on the 21st, both as a guest and as a host. We're going to take turns interviewing each other.
Ooh.
And I'm sure we'll cover some of this topic. But he's up in Canada. And, of course, Canada is getting sprayed like crazy. It's no different than anywhere else in the United States. And I wonder how much they're spraying Washington. But nevertheless, I thought I would mention that to you because I know that you've been receiving a steady diet of photos from people all around the world.
Oh, yes.
What do you have to share with us?
Well, okay. Chemtrails is a very important subject. Everyone who is involved in alternative journalism, news, information, etc., should constantly remind readers or listeners of the issue of chemtrails, because there are always new people who are just becoming aware of it. The chemtrail spraying began in earnest. They did experimental sprayings probably from the mid-60s forwards. In fact, I have a picture of a perfectly symmetrical X sprayed with certainly, you know, a chemtrail type output over Bridgeport, Connecticut, of all places, in 1966. I had someone who had that newspaper clipping and sent that to me, and somewhere along the line I'm going to post it on my site. It is the typical X that you often see with chemtrail sprayings. In fact, I just had another fellow who posts a number of short vignette articles on my website. His name is David Brandt, who I just posted something today on Current News, a short piece by David, in which he mentions the satanic X that was sprayed over his house. He's in New Mexico. And, well, anyway, the spraying operation, chemtrails, started in earnest in the winter of 97-98. I heard a Art Bell program about it probably in December of 97 or January of 98. I'm not sure. It was somewhere in that. It was William Thomas, who's a Canadian fellow up in Vancouver, and he was talking about this phenomenon of chemtrails and how people were getting quite ill in his area there. He said the hospitals were filling up, etc. And it wasn't long after that that I happened to go to a meeting at the Orange County Dowsers, and after the meeting was over, I was coming back, and I stopped in a grocery store, and I looked up, and I saw these exactly what William Thomas was describing. I says, holy cow, that's chemtrails. I happened to have a camera with me, a film camera, so I took half a dozen shots or so, and that's what started me writing, researching. I noticed about the same time Jeff Rentz, again, it was, you know, early 1998, started to post articles on his website with names like Mysterious Contrails, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the spraying program goes on daily in most parts of the Western world. That's North America, some parts of South America, not all of South America, some parts, most of Western Europe, in some parts of Asia. Spraying in Asia is far less steady, it's far less in volume and quantity than it is in the United States or in Western Europe, but still a number of countries are sprayed in Asia. I used to think that they never sprayed over China, but someone did report to me from China that they have seen chemtrails occasionally in some areas, so that tells me there's a probably minuscule, small amount of spraying over China, which is obviously a very big area. So it seems that of populated areas, China seems to be the one area that is getting between little and no spraying of chemtrails. But much of the populated world, the industrial world, is being sprayed, including what you'd normally think of remote regions of Africa, the continent of Africa. Okay, well, anyway, it seems that there is a step up in the quantity of spraying in the last few months. Most of summer, in my area at least, in Southern California, I'm about an hour south of Los Angeles in Orange County. Much of the summer, while we had a little bit of spraying here and there over my area, it wasn't much. It wasn't until late October that the frequency and intensity of spraying picked up considerably. Here, there's a lot of silt activity as soon as they spray. We'll talk about the silts in a second. And that generally prevents this overcast condition of chemtrails to occur. If you have enough sylphs who appear and begin to essentially gobble up these chemtrails, neutralize them, transmute them into a non-toxic residue, which I call transmuted clouds, these chemtrail whiteout overcasts don't have the chance to build up substantially. But I'm getting plenty of pictures, and lately a fellow from England has sent me a series of very strong pictures in which this guy, this area where he lives in, is just absolutely being bombarded beyond words. One line after another forms a grid, and then they do almost this checkerboard type of grid laying, and then it's spreading out and spreading out. Now, in examining his photos, and he sent me about, must have at least 100 or so, very good shots. Very little sylph activity. However, there is some sylph activity. There's a few. I'm going to point them out to him. I'm not sure this fellow even knows what sylphs are, but I noticed that they have nowhere near the size or quantity of sylphs that I'm getting here, for instance. And as a result, the chemtrails stick there. They really spread out, and they get these very dark, gray, ominous-looking overcast. That's strictly chemtrails. Now, this guy's very aggressive. He's a young man, I believe. I don't know how old he is, but my guess is he's probably somewhere in his early 20s, maybe late teens. He's really going to town on putting together, on asking questions. And he contacted the government of the UK, and they forwarded his letter to the what's called the Department for Transport. And he just today sent me a copy of the letter. The letter is dated December 1, 2008, so it was a few months ago that he sent this letter and got this reply. But I told him, I says, you know, it's wonderful that you actually got a reply. It says, here in the United States, for Americans who have written to their congressional representatives, senators, House of Representatives, congressmen, governors, in most cases, 96% of the time, you will get no reply at all. They simply will ignore you. And I don't care if you send a dozen letters, certify, return receipt, and all that, you are not going to get a reply in most cases. Now, a few people have, at least in the earlier period of spraying, gotten some replies. And it's very typical similar to the sort of reply this man in the UK got from the Department of Transport. I'm going to read it. It's only a one pager, and it's addressed to this fellow. I'm not going to use his name right now, so I'll just say, "Dear Mr. So and So,
Joe Sixpack."
Says, "Yes, I don't know if he wants to. I'll have to wait. So for now, I won't read it." Okay, "Dear Mr. So and So, I refer to your email inquiry to the Ministry of Defense." So that's the first person he contacted. "On trails behind aircraft. This has been passed to me at the Department of Transport for a response. Condensation trails, or contrails, are ice crystal clouds that form at high altitudes from the exhaust products of aircraft when atmospheric conditions of temperature and humidity favor this. They are initiated by exhaust products and the disturbance caused by aircraft. If contrails are long-lasting, they may disperse, forming, quote, contrail cirrus, unquote. I believe this is what you are observing. I am not aware of any independent laboratory analysis that gives credibility to claims about, quote, chemtrails, unquote, or of any matter or aerosol being ejected from aircraft. The nuclei of some of the ice crystals in a contrail will contain minute products of combustion, but are essentially pure ice. Something like 98%. Okay.
Oh, man.
Let me finish. We just have another
person. I'm trying to contain myself.
We'll comment after. Okay, continuing. Something like 98% of the frozen water actually comes from the saturated air through which the aircraft is flying. The disturbance caused by the aircraft alone can cause contrails. One of the reasons that contrails are more common today is that the newer, more efficient engines have cooler exhaust. We have an interest in characterizing any ultrafine particulates and determining if aircraft engine technology can be developed to reduce the frequency, size, and persistence of contrails. Both contrails and contrail cirrus are thought to affect climate and have an overall warming effect. However, the magnitude of warming is still the subject of intense scientific study, and estimates of this warming effect vary almost by a factor of 10. The department has sponsored research to reduce these uncertainties, and UK scientists are actively engaged in international research into this topic. Currently, it is too early to say whether contrails are worth avoiding because of the uncertainties in the effect and the potential cost of the air traffic management system to avoid them. Moreover, avoidance of contrails may incur a penalty of higher fuel usage, such that CO2 warming may be increased. Thus, more study is required. The department sponsored a major international scientific meeting in 2006, and he gives a web address, www.pa.op.dir.de/tac/, which presented the significant new research of the subject. I hope that this clarifies the position. Signed, Colin Dunn. It doesn't give his position, but he's with the Department of Transport, which is located in London on Marshall Street in the Great Minister's House, and they're a division of the Aviation of Environmental Division. Okay, that's the letter. Now, this was just written in December of last year. I would say that this storyline embraced by this fellow is essentially what our government officials who would politicians who did answer their constituents, essentially said, not quite as detailed as that, but essentially laid it at the feet of, quote, contrails. And mm-hmm. if you could get a flight controller or somebody who's in that end of it, some official from that department to respond, they essentially embraced that cover story. Now, let's talk about it. Scientifically,
yes. Okay. Can I comment on the letter?
You're chomping on the bit. I'll let you go first. Then. Okay.
Oh, man. That piece of prose was out of the mouth of a lying sack of cow chips. That's the best way I could describe it. I'm surprised he didn't mention what I'm going to bring up. Now, coincidentally, last night I had this conversation, in a sense, with my guest, Michael Herzog. We were talking about chemtrails and the lying that's going on, and I brought up a story that came to my attention, and you are probably aware of this. In May of 2006, there was a family in Iowa who got literally blasted by chemtrails that left webbing all over the roof of their house, completely covered their house, their shrubs, their vehicles parked out in the driveway, and the people woke up sick. Everybody in the family was sick the next morning. And so they gathered up some specimens and had them lab tested. Now, Dr. Holmes, who I had mentioned at the top of the show, sent a copy that was sent out by none other than my publisher and editor at the Idaho Observer, Don Harkins. And I'd like to read this, if I may. Last May, and this is referring to 2006, last May, a family in Iowa contacted the office of Senator Tom Harkin, Democrat from Iowa, to report the constant crisscrossing of chemtrails in the sky above their neighborhood. They received back from the senator's office a general accounting office report on military chaff and the material safety data sheet for aluminum-coated fiberglass fibers being sprayed 7 days a week for several hours each day in the skies above their home. The chaff is spread by pilots learning how to mask planes or send false radar images. It was reported that the military also has lead-based chaff, but that is not being used at this time. Chaff was used by the military in Europe in World War II, and according to the GAO, had been used in training here at home since the 50s. Once chaff reaches the ground, it breaks down into particles small enough to inhale. Though military spokespeople insist that chaff is not harmful, the GAO report concluded that health effects are unknown and more studies are needed. Regardless, some members of this family are very sick. On May 23rd, after a hard rain the day before, they had noticed glittering substances and a pinkish-colored powder substance on the roof of their house. They then noticed the glittering substance on many surfaces, even the dashboard of the family car. Both substances were collected and sent to a lab for analysis. Among the substances found to be in the samples were several that should simply not be there. 26 heavy metals, including arsenic, gold, lead, mercury, silver, uranium, and zinc. 6 bacteria, including anthrax and pneumonia. 9 chemicals, including acetylcholine chloride. 4 molds and fungi. 7 viruses. 2 cancers. 2 vaccines, and 2 sedatives. Over the last several months, the Idaho Observer has received a significant increase in chemtrail-related calls and letters. Most important, a dramatic increase in chemtrail spraying activity in their areas. Some are reporting the development of chronic flu-like symptoms, chronic fatigue, and body aches that they have never before experienced. We intend to expound upon this subject in greater detail, hopefully next month. Now, he goes on just to ask people to contact the military. Of course, this was a couple of years ago that this article was sent out and appeared in the newspaper. So this is really old news, and yet they're still lying about this. Now, let me give you a quick example, and then the floor is totally yours. We had a transformer blowout in our neighborhood on a power pole. You've seen those gigantic cans that are filled with oil, and they sort of act as capacitors, in a sense.
Right. Are you talking about a step down transformer? Because the line voltage coming in along the telephone poles, for electricity, are a higher voltage than what's going.
Yeah, exactly.
So it steps down the voltage to 220. Right?
Yeah.
And they're are oil-filled, right?
Yeah, so this thing caught on fire. It was around 100 degrees that day. Hmm. And the fire department came. Of course, we were without power for about 8 hours. It took them forever to get the power company there to replace that transformer. And it actually started a fire, and it was endangering two of the houses nearby. So I'm standing out there talking to the firemen, at the end of my driveway, and we're looking up at the sky, and I point up there, and now it's hot. These guys are in their fire suits, and they've got their jackets are off. They're basically wearing T-shirts, and you can see their suspenders and everything. The guys are sweating like crazy. Went into the house, brought them out some water. They're all drinking water, and we're looking up at the sky, and I said, you know what that is? And we had a big X right above us. They were spraying in real time. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, those are contrails. Now, these were at about 10,000 feet, and it, mind you, it was 100 degrees.
Yes.
Okay? So the air is basically the same kind of air that we have down on the surface. There's mm-hmm. there's not a big difference in the temperature. And I mean, it was blazing hot that day. The heat was probably what sparked the fire in that transformer, not to mention that it was probably pretty worn out. And so I began talking to them, and they were in disbelief about what I was saying. And I told them where to go online to look it up. Never heard another word about it, of course. And they're, mm-hmm. they're spraying, like it's going out of style tomorrow, you know.
Right.
And they spray, wide areas. And now we have results with sylphs. You know, I've sent you some pictures that I can call the sylphs and completely take those chemtrails away. Mm-hmm. And I've shown you in pictures that mm-hmm. process occurring. So I just wanted to mention that this is this explanation that this guy in England gave your friend is I have to be nice. It's not worth flushing down a toilet, okay?
Right.
For fear of clogging the sewage system. And yet, I'm certain that he knows instinctively that he's being lied to. He has to know. Yeah.
Yes.
So he's getting the official story.
Exactly right. So that's what I'm saying here, though, is that it is actually quite, useful that this man actually got a response.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reason our politicians and anyone who, you know, doubts this, just write your senators, your two senators, and your representative and see if you get a response. Just ask them, you know, I keep on seeing these white lines in the sky. It looks like they're being sprayed every day. And on the internet, they're called contrails. And what's going on? If you get a response, you're going to get the cover story. It's contrails. Your chances of getting a response are very, very slim, though. But you might. So I'd be sort of curious. When in the past, and let's say between 1998, perhaps, and 2002, as people became aware of, at least the ones who sent me email, very often did contact their representatives, their Washington representatives. In almost all cases, they said, you know, I never got a return. Now, there were some people who wanted to be thorough, who sent a certified letter with return receipt to virtually every senator in the Senate and did the same thing with every House member. Sometimes people would go through that expense to try to cover all the bases. And there, too, what I heard is that 95% simply ignored them. They just wouldn't answer. The ones that did get an answer either got one of these deals. We're going to look into it. We need to find out more information first. We'll get back to you. And, of course, they never get back to them. Or it's the contrail canard. It's one of the two. Now, scientifically, this English fellow's response is simply untrue. However, there are many elements of his answer which are technically correct, but he's trying to use the technically correct portion of response as the, you know, as the explanation for chemtrails, which doesn't hold water at all.
Yeah. Before they started spraying, Ken, I never saw these types of trails coming out of an ordinary commercial aircraft.
You're absolutely right. I'm going to get to that. You're absolutely right. Yeah. So I'm going to bring that's part of the what I'm going to get to. You're absolutely right. So the first thing we're going to talk about is the sum total of this guy's statement is that these chemtrails that are forming these series of parallel lines, often cross-hatch patterns that gradually fan out and will obscure and overcast the entire sky, starting with a completely blue sky without a natural cloud in it, he's saying these things are due to contrails. Now, let's talk about it. First, the frequency of contrail formation. Here's reality. If it's going to occur, it occurs at very high altitudes, usually minimum 30,000 feet, but more often above 35,000 feet. Okay.
Even 50. Yeah, 50 to 100,000 feet.
Yeah, but you know, commercial planes fly between 35 and 40. That's the typical range. Okay. Now, one thing. Two, if it's going to happen, you don't see it in the middle of July. Now, I know the upper, you know, levels of the of altitude are colder than the ground, okay? So anyone who's jumping on that one, please stop, okay? We know it's colder. However, what's happening at 35 to 40,000 feet is that in the middle of winter, let's say December, January, February, maybe early March, in northern latitudes, if the upper atmosphere is trapping a larger amount of moisture than is normally there. Now, basic science. During the winter time, when the temperature drops, humidity goes down. This is normal, the normal situation. So when it's quite cold, the humidity is quite low. However, you have what's called in meteorology inversion of air layers. Sometimes a moisture-laden lower area can be pushed upwards by an invading cold mass. Cold air is thicker and it's heavier than warm, moist air. So when a cold front comes in, as if it's a wedge, it can push under a warm, moisture-laden mass and cause that moisture-laden mass to go upwards. Now, of course, it's losing temperature as it's going upwards. But it still has relatively a higher temperature and, more important, a higher volume of moisture in that warm, moist layer that's being pushed upwards by a cold layer below it. Now, if this happens during the wintertime, let's say, you know, the air is warmer and more moist over the ocean, okay, or the seashore next to, you know, the East Coast or the West Coast. And now you have a cold front that, let's say, slid in from the land that displaces a warmer, moist air mass that was over the water, but now comes in like a wedge and pushes it upwards. And let's say I'm in Connecticut or New York, you know, a coastal area. It's the middle of January, and there's a jet plane flying at 35, 38,000 feet. If he encounters that moist layer. Now it's too cold for it's below 32 degrees. There's a phenomena in moisture meteorology called supercooled moisture. You can have moisture that's below the freezing point but doesn't turn to ice in certain conditions. That's called supercooled moisture, okay? Now, what happens is that this plane flies through this higher than normal air mass, higher than normal moisture laden air mass, which has super cooled moisture in it. As the jet exhaust comes through, it momentarily heats up the moisture to a higher temperature than it is in the super cooled state. It rises momentarily above 32 degrees. But then, because the surrounding air mass is lower than 32 degrees, it instantly refreezes, but not into a supercooled moisture, which you can't see. It freezes into an ice crystal. That's what you see as a genuine contrail. Now, as the plane takes off, this ice trail, contrail, is trailing out behind it. Does it last for very long? No. It dissipates back to supercooled moisture in the space of 15 or 20 seconds.
I was going to say that.
Hit it.
Okay. 15 seconds. And usually it's the length of the plane, maybe 1.5 times the length of the plane. That's it.
That is it. So, that's why I'm saying that there's technical aspects of this guy's response that are true. He's talking about very high altitude. Yeah, that's true. He's talking about, you know, super saturated condition. Yeah, that's true. I just explained that. And he's talking about it's mostly ice crystals. That's what's his words. He's saying there's some particulate of the exhaust. Okay, that's okay. We can add a little bit particulate. There isn't much. But the most of the action is as I described it. This moisture is momentarily rising above freezing. It refreezes into an ice crystal, and then it dissipates in 15 to 20 seconds. It never, ever, ever in the history of meteorology forms into cirrus-like cloud banks. That's pure BS.
Yeah, if I can interject something, too, and this explanation that I read that came from our general accounting office that can't even get the money straight. Now they're explaining chemtrails. they left out barium, of course. Barium is, or it's included as one of the 9 chemicals. And they use this ruse that this is caused, the quote is, it's spread by pilots learning how to mask planes. Now, they've not accomplished that yet. We see the planes spraying this. So, I mean, that's horse pucky.
I understand your frustration because this is such an affront to the intelligence of the public to be using first this contrail cover story, which they've been using from the very beginning. As you can see, even, 2009 marked the 11th year of continuous chemtrail spraying of North America, Europe, all the places, the 11th consecutive year of government-sanctioned poisoning of its own people.
Mm-hmm.
And we have these lying swine who are taking the public's money as pay, lying to us as if we're imbeciles, who know nothing about meteorology, know nothing about science, and speaking to us as if we're 9-year-old children in the face of the professor. So this other notion that the military types try to insult the American public with, that, oh, we have pilots learning how to do this chaff dispersal over the civilian area, and that's the reason we're doing this. Hey, this is 2009. The sort of technology that was used in World War II of deflecting radar with chaff and all that, there's no need for that anymore because we are now 70 years beyond that technology. The government has the ability to fly anywhere, or to travel, I should say, anywhere in the universe, as they wish. They have all kinds of anti-gravity flying saucer craft. They have time machines technology. They have invisibility technology. Navy ships, fighter planes, bombers all have invisibility technology that can completely erase themselves, if desired, from radar screens. There is no technological need for World War II chaff technology. They're talking to us as if we are imbeciles, and I greatly resent it. And I know you resent it as well.
Oh, yeah.
You
know,
want to give me a cover story, move it up to the technology of 2009. Don't recycle some BS from World War II and expect me to buy it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
They spray these X's, okay? The X, first of all, is the sign of Satan, okay? And so, and they're telling them to do that. They're literally marking the atmosphere with X's, okay? So these Illuminati swine, as you call them, are behind this. They're promoting this. And you know the UN knows about this. The UN that's concerned about starvation and disease and prosperity and the downtrodden are as much part of this as any government or any airline company or any chemical company or any pharmaceutical company or any bioweapons company. Mm-hmm. Okay, these are, and they're putting desiccated blood in this stuff too. They're putting polymers in there. And they're nano-sized polymers, which capture all of these elements and hold them and capture the moisture, which is why you're seeing the cloud formations. Mm-hmm. These particles are so fine, they're expanding because they're capturing moisture. It's simple. Mm-hmm. It's not rocket science.
Right.
Okay. So, so, I mean, you know, I've dealt with polymers. I had people trying to get me to invest in polymers, you know, polymers, the type that you use, to spread over a lawn. So that when you water your lawn in California or some other arid region, it sinks down to the root level and captures water and feeds the roots. It's a great idea as long as it's not going to be something that's going to turn the soil into hard plastic when the stuff dries out.
Right.
See, because eventually, if it doesn't rain enough, the roots are going to suck up all the water out of the polymer, and then you're going to have hard plastic down there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Which is a petroleum product. So, found another way to get rid of certain elements of the byproducts of the petroleum industry, the drug industry, the hospital waste, the waste of clinics, the waste of these laboratories, and they're spraying it on the people.
Right.
Pure and simple. And I'm as outraged as you. They're putting Prozac and Valium and Lord knows what else in there just to get people to be dumped down and apathetic and lethargic and, you know,
forgetful. Now, this is another phenomenon that I'm noticing first with myself, but also I'm hearing it and reading it from a lot of people. Yes, the incidence of forgetfulness, particularly from middle age forward, is rising dramatically. I'm convinced that, well, chemtrails are the biggest part of it, I believe. Of course, they're adulterating the food. People don't know this, but if you're buying typical supermarket food, you're getting it there. You're certainly getting it from municipal water supplies. And another thing that people don't know, I'll just mention it now, we should do a show about this, but I know a gal who's particularly gifted. Let's call her a medical intuitive. I won't use her name. But I met her in the mid-90s at a health expo in Pasadena. And I've been amazed by her ever since. We talk all the time, and she passes on a lot of valuable information. She was in with information. Let's put it that way.
Okay, your voice cutting out a little bit, Ken.
So. Okay, is that okay?
Yeah,
she started to notice. And pick up, because she has a way to determine. She has her own feedback system. Now, you know, some people use dowsing with the pendulum, but some people can, in a way, douse with their own body. Some people can do this, and if people who are good at it practice all the time, they become very adept at it. Well, she's adept, and she can get an answer very quickly. She essentially is communicating with her higher self, but the answer is coming in the form of a kinesiological response, but on herself. Normally we do kinesiological tests on another person, but she can do it on herself. And therefore, that's her feedback mechanism. She started to pick up on people who were being treated with various pharmaceuticals, especially in hospitals, that there were viruses and bacteria in the pharmaceuticals themselves. They were contaminated. That, mm-hmm. in turn, was causing the patient further problems beyond the reason they were taking the drugs. It's that it was setting up, you know, longer-term sort of chronic infective conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're going to talk about this on another show. We'll probably go into great depth. But there's another source of poisoning, prescribed pharmaceuticals. This could possibly also apply to over-the-counter. Now, this is, that doesn't mean every prescribed drug and every over-the-counter is contaminated. But a certain percentage of them are. She's picking it up. So we should be aware of that. The other area you got to think about when it comes to not allowing yourself to be poisoned is don't get a vaccination for anything, for any reason, no matter what you're told. Avoid vaccines at all costs, especially now. I believe the reason they're stepping up chemtrail poisoning is because they're looking to get the bird flu, quote, pandemic off the ground. Bird flu, of course, is a lab-created, militarized, weaponized version of what was a relatively benign virus that only affected certain avian populations. So they call it the bird flu, avian flu, right? But what they've done, our government, our DOD, other governments around the world, in laboratories, have combined it with human flu. In fact, there was just a story. Dr. Truot just sent me I haven't posted it yet. He sent it to me about a week ago, but I plan to post it, in which a specific lab, and I forget the name of the lab, had, I think it was a year and a half ago, sent out all these contaminated vials of avian bird flu to a number of laboratories around the world. And the labs that received the shipment picked up on the fact that they were contaminated with this live avian flu. And they jumped all over this distributor. I'm forgetting the name of this outfit. It seems to me begins with B. But anyway.
It wasn't Bayer, was it?
I don't want to be guessing. So, we'll do a show about this, and I'll get the information straight.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, I want to emphasize to anyone who's listening, the only bird flu we have to worry about is nothing that nature created. All quote scares of epidemic, pandemic, including the most recent one, bird flu, are laboratory-created bioweapons. Why were they created in a lab? Quite simple. You have to remember this. The Illuminati, the One World Order crowd, the One World Government people want to reduce the world's population to what they think is a manageable size of 500 million total worldwide. Now, there's 6.5 billion approximately people in the world today, 6.7, whatever the number is. They want to reduce that to about 500 million. That's the number they want. Chemtrails, the purpose of chemtrails, the purpose of developing avian flu into a bioweapon, the purpose of developing AIDS, HIV, another laboratory-created concoction, SARS, hantavirus, Ebola, flesh-eating bacteria, all these mystery diseases that cropped up in the last, 15, 20 years or so, are all due to laboratory creations. Why? They want to reduce the world's population. So we have to bear that in mind. Now, the poisoning operation is probably being stepped up because they're probably getting to a point in which they want to perhaps release their avian flu broadcast. I don't know how they plan to do it. I suspect they might contaminate water supplies, milk supplies, food supplies, groundwater, chemtrail aerosol spraying, vaccines. You might get the avian flu through your avian flu vaccine. That's why I want to caution people, don't get vaccinated for anything, especially the avian flu.
You know, now here's another point I'd like to bring up, if I can interject something. You know, there's animals out there, herds, you know, farm animals that people end up eating that are out there all the time in this stuff. Yep. The crops that are deluged with this stuff end up, in some occasions, take, for instance, the fruits that they put a paraffin wax on. Do they do that to make it attractive, or do they do that to seal in the contaminants? You know, something to think about.
Yeah, they've been using paraffin wax for quite some time, and its typical role is to minimize bruising, protect it from mold, bacteria attacking the skin of the cucumber, for instance, peppers, etc. That's the traditional reason. As to locking in contaminants, very good point, Don. A very valid point. You can strip away, of course, wax. There's a number of ways to do it, but let's talk about antidotes for a second before I lose excuse me, before I lose track of what I'm talking about here.
All right,
we're devoting quite a bit of the show to chemtrails. So let's let me just diverge a little bit so I can talk about remedies. First, here's an easy way: when you get vegetables, fruits, and vegetables from the supermarket, etc. There's a number of ways you can clean surface-laden residues, whether that's pesticides, whether that's chemtrail residues, particulates, etc., that settle on the vegetables. First, you wash them in fairly, you know, warm to hot water, just as your initial wash, okay, to get off the surface stuff. Then afterwards, there's an easy way to sterilize the outer skin of both vegetable and fruit. And this can apply to most vegetables and fruit, including berries, strawberries, apples. Of course, you wouldn't do it on something like oranges because you peel that. But if you're going to eat the skin, then this will apply, and it'll apply to most vegetables, lettuces, peppers, endives, etc. Anything leafy like that, this will work fine. You get a large stainless steel basin. I mean, the biggest thing that can fit in your sink. You know, they're cheap. Go to a discount store and you can buy these huge stainless steel basins from India, China, etc. They're not expensive anymore. Stainless steel cookware is so common now, and it's quite inexpensive. Okay, so get a nice big one. So you can fill up your whole sink and put your whatever you want to clean up, put it in there and fill it up with water. You can get a high quality type of bleach. Now, you don't want to use supermarket bleach that's used for laundry. There's a reason for that. That bleach is contaminated with all kinds of things. Dr. Hulda Clark discusses this in her book, but it's contaminated with axle grease, with petroleum, etc. There's a lot of stuff you don't want in laundry bleach to go on to your food. So I'm going to talk about using bleach, but where you get it is not from a supermarket. You go to a swimming pool supply store. Now, just about everywhere in the country, there's swimming pool supply stores. If you don't have one within driving distance, you can do it over the internet, okay? But even in northern latitudes, people have swimming pools, indoor swimming pools, you know, schools have swimming pools. They need to use chlorine, of course. They should use ozone, but most of them use chlorine. But what they also add to a swimming pool is bleach. It's a special type of bleach, though. It's a cleaner bleach than what you find in supermarkets, and it's of a higher concentration. Supermarket bleach is 60%. It's contaminated. You don't want to use it. But pool bleach is 12% A, and you want to look for the initials NSF on it. That stands for National Standards Foundation. And most pool supply companies carry that type of bleach. If it says NSF on it, absolutely clean. It has no contaminants in it. Now, if you take, well, let's say your basin, I'm just have to guess at the numbers. Let's say it's a 10 quart basin, maybe 8, 10, 12 quarts, somewhere around there. You put in about 2 1-ounce capfuls of 12% pool bleach into the water. And you allow, I typically swish it around. If whatever I'm working on, if it's lettuce, romaine lettuce, for instance, I'll pull it off so that I won't just put the entire, you could do it that way, but I'd rather pull the leaves apart. Or if I'm, want to sterilize fruit, it's okay if you can mix certain types of fruit. You don't want to like mix berries and strawberries because they'll cross, you know, the flavor cross, but, things like apples or pears, you know, no problem. Just put them together and let them essentially soak in this bleach solution. You could time it if you want, but typically I do it 8 to 10 minutes. You know, if you leave it a little longer, it's not the end of the world, but you don't want to leave it overnight because you're going to get the bleach will penetrate too deep and you pick up a little of the taste. 8, 10, 15 minutes or so. You dump it out, and now you rinse it not once, not twice, but 3 times, thoroughly rinse, fill that basin with fresh, clean water, dump it, do it 3 times so that you really thoroughly wash it. And then you could dry your vegetables or fruit. Anyways, I often use paper towels. You can put it out on a regular terry cloth or, you know, a terry-type cloth towel. And dry it off, air dry it if you want, then put it away. You will find that A, the fruit or vegetable will last much longer than if you didn't do that. Why? You're killing surface bacteria and virus that normally would cause the vegetable or fruit to brown and, you know. So if you can, typically, I just leave it out. We leave our fruits, et cetera, in open bowls. You can refrigerate some fruits and so forth and, you know, extend their life that way. But you'll find that they'll last much longer by giving them this bleach bath.
Mm-hmm.
But you've also oxidized off the surface skin of that fruit or vegetable. And particularly with leafy stuff, it penetrates the surface a bit. Any noxious substances or any bacteria or virus, et cetera, that were delivered via chemtrails. Now, naturally, if it's metals, the rinsing itself should wash away most, you know, the bariums, the arsenic, all the metals that, you know, there's at least 15 or 16 different types of metals that are sprayed with chemtrail droppings. But you're getting rid of the lion's share of toxins by that very simple method. Now, another idea while we're just sharing ideas is that if you have an ozone machine, I have ozone machines, you can simply ozonate the water. You put the tube in there that's producing the ozone in what's called an air bubbler and let the ozone percolate, ozonated water, percolate to the vegetables or fruit. Ozone is very powerful. It's very fact-acting, and you can get, you know, pretty dramatic results in even a few minutes, but typically I let it bubble through there for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes. And, again, you don't have to go through multiple rinsings per se because there's nothing to really wash away. Ozone gas, when it, which is, just for people who don't know, ozone is simply 3 atoms of oxygen which are temporarily bound together. But one oxygen atom will release, the minute it hits something, let's say the leaf of the lettuce, it will release that singlet, what's called singlet oxygen, and that singlet oxygen will combine with contaminants. It literally, that's what bleaching is, it's oxidation. And you get this combining with, and now it combines with the contaminate and, you know, turns it into an oxide. So, for instance, if you get, just as an example, if you have a metal and that's in microscopic form on the fruits or vegetable. When the oxygen singlet hits it, it'll form an oxide, which is a salt, which really, it'll go into solution into the water, but it's no longer on your vegetable or fruit. That's the important part, okay? It's a way of oxidizing it. And it's easy to do. Ozone machines are available, home units, relatively low cost. It's used to sterilize water, but I use it to drink ozonated water. I don't, as soon as I make ozone water, I drink it right away. It'll dissipate out of the water within 20 minutes, but if you drink it right away, that ozone goes into your body. From your stomach, goes into your intestines. From there, it's drawn into your arterial system. And that will ozonate combined with viruses, bacterias, metabolic particles in your body that your liver can't break down. It's very useful to drink ozonated water. You can ozonate olive oil. Olive oil has the capacity to hold on to the ozone molecule for a short, well, I shouldn't call it, well, it is. It's a molecule of three oxygen atoms bound together. It holds on to it for a longer period of time than water. Water dissipates in a short time, but olive oil can hold on to ozone for many days. And if you put it in a refrigerator, it'll hold on to it for 30 or 45 days. So if you take a teaspoon or two of ozonative olive oil daily, you are getting this steady cleansing effect of ozone into your body. It's an easy, cheap way to get ozone treatments without, you know, having to go to Mexico, for instance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, if I can make a comment about the fruits or vegetables that we peel.
Yeah.
If you're handling these and they have, you know, it's not like oranges aren't going to have any contaminants on them, or bananas or avocados as an example, or certain kinds of potatoes. I recommend cleaning them anyway, even though you're not going to eat the peel, just because unless you're using the peel, let's say, to grate it as part of a way to flavor your cooking. Some people do that. I mean, they sell lemon peel and orange peel and lime peel in dried form in spice bottles. Now, if you're handling this, what are you going to do? You're going to peel an orange with these contaminants and then touch the pristine food on the inside, assuming none of that got inside.
Yeah,
and,
you're right.
You know, so, and then you should also wash your hands and wash all the surfaces. A quick and a very effective method also is to use 3% hydrogen peroxide. Get a brand new sponge or rag that you use only for that purpose, and wipe down your cupboards, wipe the sink, wipe everything down with hydrogen peroxide. Let it sit there for a minute or so. Yep. And in the event that it does come into contact with any kind of contaminant, it'll start bubbling and even fizzing. And if you've ever had an infection on your hand or foot, and you poured straight hydrogen peroxide on that, it will actually bubble as it's eating the bacteria.
Yep.
It's very interesting effect, and it's probably because of the toxins that the bacteria are excreting as they're multiplying. They release all sorts of toxins that are not compatible with hydrogen peroxide. But you've got to use the 3%, and don't leave it on forever, because it can burn just like bleach can.
Yes, I have a page on my website that's devoted exclusively to hydrogen peroxide. So when you go to my website, at the top of each and every page, there is a series of links. There's rows of linked words. I don't know how many rows I've got. Maybe it's 11 or 12. I haven't counted them.
I think you have 57. No.
Well, anyway,
you have a lot.
The lowest row towards the right side, you'll look there, you'll see the word hydrogen peroxide, and click on. There's many wonderful articles about the usage and application of hydrogen peroxide. It's, of course, another oxidizing solution. Ozone is an oxidizing solution. It releases this singlet oxygen atom. Hydrogen peroxide is H2O2. Water normally is H2O. Mm-hmm. And you could force oxygen gas into water, and the water will, under the right conditions and pressure, will absorb the oxygen and add it to the water molecule. Therefore, now you have two oxygen atoms that's temporarily combined with the water. That's why they call it H2O2. Mm-hmm. And when it contacts some substance, like a protein, for instance, that's oxygen, single oxygen, that was attached to the water molecule will now release itself. And again, you have one atom of oxygen. That's what's giving you this oxidizing action or bleaching action.
Yeah.
So in that sense, hydrogen peroxide, ozone, and bleach are essentially doing the same thing. They're releasing a single atom of oxygen, and that's called oxidation.
Yeah. By the way, John from Massachusetts sent us a message that likely that company that you were trying to find the name of is Baxter, and that rings familiar with me.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Yes, very good. Yeah. Thank you,
well,
John. That's
thanks
good.
To John.
Okay, great. Okay, that's wonderful. Okay. Anyway, I'd like to talk about, just briefly, another modality that I frequently use, the thing about the 12% pool bleach, NSF pool bleach, should be borne in mind because, A, it's very cheap. Now, if enough people do this, they'll start raising the cost. But you can normally buy, by the way, you don't buy it in 1 gallon containers. When you go to a pool store, they sell it in what looks like a plastic crate with 4 gallons in it. That's fine. They're charging you about $3.50 per gallon. That's cheap. This is 12% bleach. It's double the strength. It's far cleaner than supermarket bleach, yet it's cheaper. And believe me, you're only using a capful or two at a time. It'll last you for a half a year. And you could use it for all times, not only sterilizing your fruits and vegetables in the way I described. You can take a bath with bleach water. Now, you don't fill the whole water up with bleach, folks. Just so you know, because I've had some people who burn themselves. Bleach is powerful. In the 12% form, you must wear rubber gloves when handling the bottle and taking off the cap and pouring it. Wear rubber gloves. It gets on your skin. You're going to feel it. It's 12% bleach. Okay? But what you could do is you could put 1, 2, or even 3 cups. Start with one. Into a tub full of water and get in it. Sit in it for 20 or 30 minutes or so. A wonderful alternative healer by the name of Hazel Parcells, she's passed on now. She passed on in the mid-90s, but she lived 104. She used to work with Dr. Ruth Drown, by the way, the famous radionics pioneer. She recommended many types of baths, and one of them was a bleach bath. Someone wrote a book about her protocol. She never wrote a book herself, but somebody did who did work with her and studied with her. And I have it. And she recommends taking, at the time she said Clorox bleach. I'm saying don't use Clorox bleach. Don't use supermarket laundry bleach. Use this NSF grade bleach. 12%, one cup. Tub full of water, sit in it. You'll notice good things happening. You can't do this every day, but you do it once or every week, once every 2 weeks or so. All kinds of benefits can flow from this, particularly if you have any sort of skin-related outbreak. It'll tend to clear up skin disorders quickly.
And NSF does not stand for non-sufficient funds. Unless you make it.
That's correct.
We've got Dr. Christopher Holmes on the line. Would you like to take a question?
Yes, of course. I know who this is, yes.
Yes, yeah, Dr. Holmes, are you with us?
Yeah, I am. Just a couple comments on chemtrails. One is, I quote J. Edgar Hoover, the former head of the FBI. He said, once the individual is handicapped by coming face to face with a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists. And I think that's part of the problem with chemtrails, that people can't believe that these people would be so psychiatrically disturbed that they would spray us with poisons from the air. Like, they can't conceive that. So that's one comment on chemtrails. And the other thing, I just, a brief point on chemtrails, is that those pilots out there who are doing it, they should realize that when we bring them down, they're going to be charged with terrorist activity. This is terrorist activity, being sprayed by pollutants from the air. Our children, our land, our pets, our country. These people are terrorists. So I urge people around the country, try to identify where these people are flying out. It's usually not airports. It's a smaller airports. Find out where they're coming from. People should follow these people, get their names, take videos of these people as criminal evidence. In my view, these people are committing multiple counts of administration of toxic substances, and I think their activities deserve life imprisonment. And I think we should put that out there, that these people, when they're brought down, all these scumbags, that these people will serve life in jail for what they've done. This is unbelievably intolerable. And then these scumbag elites think they care for our environment. They're killing off the bees. They're killing off the insect life. They're killing off the amphibians. They're destroying our food supply. This is unbelievably outrageous. These people, we need to recognize they're terrorists, and these people should be subject to criminal prosecution. And I urge people to document their crimes.
Dr. Holmes, if you heard Ken read the letter that he got from England and this explanation from the authorities as to the purpose for the spraying and that it's really contrails, it's just a phenomenon of flying an airplane, it flies in the face of global warming, doesn't it? Here we have planes that are crashing because of ice buildup during global warming. And now we have contrails at 2,000 feet.
Yeah, the way the government covers up its crimes is by telling lies. And then they get caught in one lie, they'll come up with another lie. It's totally superficial. I live close to an international airport where I live. And I see regular airplanes. You don't even see any contrails behind them. There's nothing. These planes, they fly from one end of the horizon to the other. They leave a trail right across the sky. They turn around. They come back. Sometimes they start it. They spray. They stop. They turn around. They come back. They continue their spray. Like, these politicians are just lying. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, how do you know when a politician is lying? His lips are moving.
Well, do you have a question or a comment for Ken?
No, I'm sorry. I'm the justice critic for the Canadian Action Party. And this is just one of my... When we bring these people down, as we're going to, in my view, within 3 years, they're going to be imprisoned and we're going to take our countries back.
We ought to keep tabs of the people that have Morgellons disease and pass away, because... Those can be prosecuted as murder.
Yeah, even otherwise, it's administration of toxic substances. This is a terrorist activity. It's slow kill. It's slow kill. And see, they make money at the pharmaceutical companies and through your doctors. Everybody gets sick and goes to the doctor, and then the doctors are corrupted and give you petrochemical pharmaceuticals.
Yes. Yes. Ken, you got a comment on that?
Well, I'm glad to hear Dr. Holmes mention what he did about the responsibility of those who are engaged in this activity. Of course, it's crimes against humanity. Of course, there are involved in a genocidal operation. They are as guilty of murder as those who participated in the Nazi death camps, of course. I would add that I've mentioned this in my own writings, but I'll I'll amplify it here. I'll add that anyone who assists in the production, transportation of the substances that are being sprayed from these sprayer planes, as well as the mechanics who maintain the airplanes, the owners of the planes, whether it's the U.S. government, whether it's non-government people, the truck drivers who's bringing in these aerosol, you know, solutions that are contaminated, all these individuals are involved in a conspiracy of genocide. They are all equally guilty of crimes against humanity. And if the day
Let's
ever
not forget
does come,
the bartenders.
That,
Let's not forget the bartenders that are mixing the cocktails too.
Yeah, because you know. Yeah, in the past, I've read reports that much of the toxic substances produced in China and is brought in on ships, perhaps on planes, I would assume. There's such a cocktail of very toxics, both living and non-living, as well as nanotechnology. You mentioned the Morgellons. That has definitely a nanotechnology component to it. Now, I might say that in the earlier years of spraying, there was many pilots and crews involved in the spraying operation. Today, you, including commercial airlines, many commercial airlines were recruited into spraying. They were being paid to retrofit their planes with the spraying equipment. So naturally, the people who are flying the planes, the executives who made the decision for these secret government contracts, I was contacted by a man who used to work for a major American airline who came upon paperwork in which he saw the actual contract. I'll get into the story on another occasion, but he verified that he since fled the country, but he had very heavy duty information. But one of the major U.S. airlines, he saw the contract that they're paying him, and he also took pictures in the hangars, this is in Chicago, where they were retrofitting the planes for the sprayer equipment. Everyone who's involved in any stage of chemtrail delivery or any aspect of the operation are equally guilty of conspiracy. They're involved in murder. I mean, many people have already died as a result of chemtrail poisoning, particularly very old and very young people. And I would say this too, though. Many of the planes that are spraying today, and by the way, not all platforms that are spraying chemtrails are conventional airplanes. Some of them are alien obtained platforms that are usually unseen. They're usually in an invisible state, but occasionally they have been witnessed, but just momentarily. But so usually they use invisibility technology. They almost look like two cubes, as if they were a dumbbell. There's a cylinder connected between them. They look like two flying cubes, and they're spraying out chemtrails. And they've been observed for a number of years now. It's not just recently. There are also spheres, or sometimes they're called orbs, that fly in among chemtrails. But I might say that many of the planes today, Dr. Holmes, in fact, are completely computer-controlled drones. There's actually no live crew on board. They're completely computer-controlled.
Very interesting,
drones, okay? So I would say probably the majority today are drones. And the ones that you see, and particularly when they're working in tandem, they're laying perfectly parallel lines down, and even when they turn in unison, so the parallel spacing between the lines remains perfectly precision. That's a computer-controlled aircraft. That is not humanly controlled.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, we've got to wrap up the show, gentlemen.
Thank you very much
for your call, Dr. Holmes.
Yes, thanks.
Goodbye.
Okay. Well, there you go. You see, we've got someone else that's quite aware of that, and you know they're spraying Canada like crazy. We have a lot of listeners that report and visitors to our websites. You and I equally, I think, mm-hmm. We're hearing this all over the place. Now, we had a call a couple of nights ago from Bob in Colorado who mentioned that this has been going on there for the past 14 years in Colorado. And
that doesn't surprise me. Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona tend to be beta testing areas for the military,
yeah.
The Air Force particularly. So, yes, in fact, I have gotten emails in earlier years when we first started to post chemtrail stories. People had said, you know, this testing, I remember seeing this testing going on over, and they would name a place, in the 80s. In some places, some cases, people told me in the 70s. I have this newspaper clipping from Bridgeport, Connecticut. It dated 1966. Perfectly, you know, X right over the city. Just a perfect X. There's no way, you know, of course they called it contrails in the story, but it was, of course, a beta test. So, yeah, this sporadic spraying, testing spraying was going on. Probably from the mid-60s forward. But when I said it started in earnest, I meant not only in North America, but in Europe.
Yeah.
In earnest, meaning daily, every single day, most major states of the country, of North America, were being sprayed from the winter of 97-98 forward. And that continues unabated until today.
Yeah. Well, Ken, we've run out of time. Okay. I want to thank you for being on the show tonight and recommend that the listening audience go visit your website at educate-yourself.org, educate-yourself.org, educate-straight-line-yourself.org. How many ways can we say it?
Educate-minus-yourself.org.
Educate-bailout-yourself.org. That minus sign. Anyway, thanks a lot, and it was an interesting show, and a special thanks to Dr. Christopher Holmes for calling in. I'm going to be on Dr. Holmes' show, by the way, on the 21st of this month, Saturday, the 21st, and I'm going to be a guest and a host, both. We're going to trade places during that two-hour broadcast, so you might want to listen to that. I think it's going to be very interesting. Ken, you're on again next week, next Wednesday, in fact. So I look forward to that show. In the meantime, if you go outside and there are chemtrails out there, at least wear a hat and a gas mask.
Yep.
And so you have a good night, and it's time to say goodnight to the listening audience. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.